Hi everyone, and welcome to the seventh in our series of virtual events, which we've kind of coined the New Horizons series, with, that we're doing in association with our podcast, Without Borders. I'm Brendan Craig, I'm the founder and managing director of Taito. And the idea behind this series was to kind of create a space where we could have conversations with interesting people within the world of business and sport and other areas, talking about how we help sort of get through the present and also plan for the future. So that was kind of like a bit of background on why we created this series. And I am joined by my colleague, Flick Hazelhurst, who's going to be joining our chat with Charles today.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Thank you, everybody, for joining live today. A very warm welcome. Just a quick FYI that all of these episodes today's and all of the ones we've done previously are available at taitopr.com as part of our Without Borders podcast on our events page. And you can also search for them on your favourite podcast platforms, so Spotify, iTunes, all of those are available there as well. Just search Without Borders and you can find them there too.
And so today's topic, so, you know, as we've kind of been following this events and the discussion sort of moving forward, you know, it started to raise sort of very big questions about what COVID-19 is going to mean for the future of business and industry. And it's prompted, you know, commentators to start talking about the potential emergence of a new normal. And one of the areas in particular that's sort of coming up is the discussion around what role automation will play in that new normal, given, you know, the impact of, you know, the need to social distance. So today, very excitingly, we have leading AI, IoT and future of work expert Charles Towers-Clark. He's going to be talking about, to us about this. It's very timely because Charles's company, the company that he is the chairman of, Pod Group, has just released a report looking at the impact of automation and what impact we expect. But Charles also comes at this from a different perspective in that he is the author of a book, The Weird CEO, and he's very much kind of very, very focused and interested on the changing character of work and how we're going to have to adapt and manage that. And Charles is also a regular Forbes contributor and a regular contributor to the national print and broadcast media. So extremely well qualified to talk about this topic. So thank you, Charles.
Say that.
Well, thank you for joining us, Charles. How are you today?
No, thanks for having us along. I hate introductions like that because it makes it sound like I actually know something.
Well, I think that's, it's certainly true.
Should we just let everybody else decide after this rather than...
That's true. We'll put that to a poll after.
Yeah,
But so Charles, great to have you here. We're going to be, we've got some, Felicity and I have got some questions, but we also are going to be inviting people on the audience to ask questions. So members of the audience, if you look down at the bottom of your screen, you'll see a tab that says Q&A. Feel free to ask questions, and you know, depending on those questions, we'll either ask those at the end or as we go through. But it probably makes sense, Charles, to kick things off by saying that you've to kind of talking a little bit about this research that you've released today, or you've released a report looking at how COVID-19 is going to change the face of automation. Could you maybe give us a sense of what some of the headline points that have come from that report and that research?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into a long thing on statistics, but we did a report looking at what the expectations on for the future of work across 500 business leaders from the UK. And there were some interesting things. There was about four things which I found interesting. I mean, there's huge mass of statistics which I'm not going to go into, but there were four things which I found really interesting. The first was that almost three quarters of the people or the recipients expected a new wave of automation to happen as a result of COVID. That 57% believed that 3 in 10 roles will be automated. So clearly people are thinking about this, and a very, very low percentage, I mean like 2%, thought that nobody would be would lose their jobs as a result of automation. 62% expected COVID to accelerate plans and to replace processes with automation, which is probably something we want to go into a bit further on, because I think that's a really interesting thing. But the one which really I liked most of all was that, again, almost three quarters of those who answered expected employees to fulfill their potential as a result of the automation coming out of COVID. Mm. And that was the one which really kind of made me feel there is some good potential here, and people aren't looking at automation as just a way to cut costs, but as a way to get rid of the dull stuff and let people and bring out the best of people.
That's really interesting, isn't it? That it's kind of, I think probably just, it's just really incredible living through a moment like this that has forced us to change so dramatically.
Yeah.
And it's forced us to kind of like ask questions and engage with issues that we would kind of move on so slowly if it wasn't for what's happened. And it's kind of opened our minds to possibilities and opportunities that we just wouldn't have engaged with in the same way.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I've heard various people sort of say we've gone through 3 years or 30 years or whatever it is in the space of 3 months. But I think what it's done, I mean, it's a horrible situation that we're in, and it's specifically very horrible for people who lost their jobs.
Yes.
But what it has done is exactly what you just said. It's made people change their mind on things, change their attitude. And from that point of view, I think it is positive, because it's giving us far more potential for pushing the change which needed to take place. And there is a negative point of view, which is we've got a perfect storm. We've got COVID, we've got automation, and we've got a recession. And the recession probably would have come along, you know, we're 10 years on from the last recession. So recession probably would have come along at any point. So that's the kind of negative viewpoint. The thing which I'm trying to take out as a positive here is that as a result of COVID, we have had to change our mindsets, and therefore we're more likely to make the changes. And business leaders, and not just leaders, but everybody in organizations, are more likely to make the changes required to then deal with the automation problem.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting, isn't it? It's the fact that three quarters of people can see the potential for automation to enable people to fulfill their potential more.
Yeah.
That's kind of really positive and kind of, yeah, like gives a real sense of the opportunity that people see.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier on the fact that I've written this book, All the Way to CEO, and that's all about trying to get people to take initiative and take responsibility. It actually came off the back of a change I made in my own in Pod Group a couple of years ago, where we changed everything to try and push the responsibility and get people to self-manage, which has happened to be worked out quite well for us, because we're very used to managing ourselves. So when we're not in the office, when people aren't in the office, it doesn't really matter. But that is what's going to be the future, or should be what's going to be the future, is that people are going to be wanting to manage themselves. I think another positive thing that's come out of this is the fact that people have seen that there is, for those people who have still got jobs, have seen that there is a different way to be working. And a lot of people don't want to incur the environmental damage, the time, the stress, which goes with having to go to an office. So that possibility for employees to say, actually, well, I'm going to do work just as well at home. I was talking to the CEO of Wire, which is a Slack alternative. It's a sort of more secure version of Slack. And he was saying that he was really surprised that he could trust his employees. I mean, in some ways one could turn that around the other way, but he didn't expect to be able to sort of let everybody go home and then they would miraculously do their jobs.
Yeah.
I would ask the question, why not? People are instilled to do their best job. They're not going to, people don't go to work to do a bad job. But that's what it was interesting, and I've heard this from various other people as well, that it's forced leaders to understand that they can trust employees.
Yeah. I think, you know, like as someone who created and launched a remote business 3 years ago, you know, like I had a lot of people that were very skeptical about the idea of, you know, creating a business remotely. And now it's kind of interesting to see that as people have had to adapt and, you know, to that situation, there's, you know, people have talked about the huge benefits of that. And it seems that in a similar way, the experience of seeing the constraints that we've had to live with as a consequence of social distancing has opened people's eyes to the fact that we actually need automation. You know, that society needs automation, and it's kind of opened people's eyes to the potential benefits that we could all reap as a consequence of it.
Yeah. And the thing which I think is interesting between, to put a complete parallel, I was thinking about this yesterday morning on my walk. Just said, well, I do have some friends. And came up to somebody and said, hey, what do you think about when you're on your own? Oh, well, I think about digitalization. I was thinking about this and try and sort of kind of put it in a way that links it together. And what COVID has done has caused us to all become digital.
Yeah.
As a result of that, if you want to go from there to automation, what we're really saying is because we've now gone digital on a lot of aspects and we're using more tools, it's easier to use those tools to process, to create a process out of the task that we're doing. And once one's created the process, it's easier to automate it. Mm. Whilst before, when we were in offices, a lot of this stuff may not have gone onto a tool. It may have just been talked about or just done more informally. Now, because of the distance, we probably have to do that. There's things which need to go onto tools to make it easier to work. And I think that's another reason why the state we're in at the moment is going to push us towards automation, because it's actually allowed us and created a situation for processes to be understood.
So it's kind of just not as big a leap for people to think about. Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you think that that's what holds people back in ordinary circumstances, that it does feel like a really big leap to go from how we work at the moment or how we have been working over the past few years to a state of automation?
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite related to COVID, but I mean, going back to when I made the change in my own organization, we did it when things were going well. And it was a very, very painful process. And there was a number of people who just didn't get, or actually more accurately, I couldn't understand why they were blocking the progress towards self-management organization when it would have been in their benefit. I mean, including being able to choose their own salaries and things like this. And eventually I sat down with one of them. I said, look, just tell me, I don't understand. What is it? They said, well, I'm comfortable where I am. And I don't really see, I mean, I see theoretically the need for the change, but I don't really see it's necessary.
Yes.
And what this has done is said, well, whether you are comfortable or not comfortable with it, it's happened.
Mm. Yes.
And therefore, if for those leaders who want to, who are looking at this and going, well, we're just waiting to go back to back to what it was. I think I would, if I was an employee in one of those companies, I would get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to survive. I mean, the better employees are going to say, well, I've seen now what it is to be able to live in a different way and work in a different way. And maybe before I wouldn't have accepted that, to go back to your point, list here. Maybe I wouldn't have accepted that before. But now I've been forced to take that change. Therefore, yes, it's going to be easier to do so.
It does seem like there's potentially going to be a bit of a like an in-between phase. Like I've kind of been talking to some people who work in office environments that are now kind of like have to go through this horrendous process of COVID-19 proofing their office for the return to work. They're laying down tape, you know, to say where people have to walk. They're they're taping off the kitchen because that's kind of an area. It's not a particularly welcoming thought to have to return to an office in that kind of situation. And obviously, in some areas of work, there is no choice but to turn to that. But you do think that in the areas where there is a choice to adapt to a new environment and to do that really quickly, that those businesses, that's kind of probably the way to go.
Yeah, I think that there's also going to be a, certainly for our own organization, I went into the office the other day, it's like a large office, nobody's there. And it made me wonder, when is anybody going to come back? And we allow people to choose when, where and when they want to work. But I think there's a lot of people who are going to feel, well, I don't want to go back into that environment because I don't want the risk. Maybe I've got elderly relatives, in which case I definitely don't want the risk of going in. Which is going to make it interesting for a control point of view. So leaders may, or managers may wish to say to people, you need to come in. Well, that's going to lose respect very, very fast. Because you've gone from a point of view where you're saying, well, as an employee, I want you to come in to, I am potentially risking your life. I mean, it's a little extreme, but I'm sure some people will see it like that. Yeah. And so that managing that is also going to be it's also going to be interesting.
Yeah,
I think as well, because this has almost acted as like a global experiment, a forced experiment of home working that's proven actually for lots of companies to be very successful. So I think it almost will make people feel even less trusted and therefore even less valued if after that experiment that's worked so well, they're still not able to do that in their, you know, when exactly. things do return to a bigger level.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Exactly that.
So in terms of the other things that could happen in this kind of new normal that we're going into from an automation perspective, what do you think is the most exciting? What excites you most about what that new normal might look like?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be potentially at the risk of task within jobs being taken and being automated. And I'll come on to that one the third. But two examples which I do find exciting. One is self-driving cars. I mean, I'm just praying for the day when we have self-driving cars, not least because we'll save 100,000 deaths on the roads and less in the UK, but those are the US figures. And just the it's for all the reasons why it's there, but I think it's a parallel to where we are now, in so much as people don't want to do it because they're not used to doing it. If something happened, such as I don't know, oil prices went the other way, and we ended up where literally people couldn't afford to drive cars with oil in them. Then you know, maybe that would force it. If we had something like a COVID from related to cars, then maybe it would force that forward. The other one which I really find interesting is the Go, Amazon Go shops. There's about 10 of them in the States. I think they're opening up one in London. You literally walk in, you swipe your app, and then you just pick whatever you like. And they're using a combination of cameras and AI to understand what you have and haven't bought. You just walk out. Well, that's going to be a very something which I think shoppers are going to really want in these times. But it's going to stay afterwards because, again, people are going to get used to it, but also not having to queue at a till. Yeah, I love that idea.
What was your third one?
The third one is about what I'm excited about is coming back to the surveys is the fact that people are thinking about how is it that we are going to fulfill employees and my motivation in life at the moment is around trying to get people to take initiative and responsibility, and if we've created a circumstance and a situation where that can happen, then that I'm very excited by that. Again, not a very nice way to do it, but if something positive comes out of it at the end, then good.
I think the Amazon Go example is really interesting. I think they are actually looking to open one, or they were before all of this happened, around Oxford Circus in London. Yeah. And I agree with you. I think it's an absolutely great idea. I guess it's one of the things, though, and particularly at the moment with how hard hit retail in particular has been as a result of COVID-19 and particularly workers within retail. I suppose that's one of the things that begs the question, are people right to be, you know, there's all these exciting things going on with automation, but are people right to be worried about the impact it might have on society as well as excited about the good things it can bring?
Yes, it's a short answer to that. I mean, there is a negative side on all of this, which worries me a little bit. I'm not sure whether you've come across the term surveillance capitalism. It was originally, it was promoted by an American sociologist from Harvard called Zuboff. And that's all about how the big five, the Amazons and Facebooks, Netflix, et cetera, are looking at what you're doing and for capitalist reasons, they're taking surveillance. I understand and I fully support, and I think we definitely need to do it, the track and trace requirements for COVID. That's probably the quickest and easiest way to really get rid of it. But it does raise some concerns as well, as to once that technology has gone into it's very difficult to undo. I'm less worried about the UK. We have great democratic values, but in other countries where this is already going in, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to unroll that. That's one aspect. And the other is the fact that, sorry to keep harping on about this, but the other is the fact that we need to change our mindsets so that we are going to be adding to the jobs rather than doing routine jobs.
Yeah.
And that's, jobs will change, and our ability, and there's lots of people who say that we're going to lose lots of jobs, and there's lots of people who say it's going to be made up. Our ability to make it up is going to be completely and utterly dependent upon our ability to change our mindset and do different jobs, just accept that the routine stuff is going to be done by automated, and the thinking stuff is going to be done by humans. And there's a north-south shift on that, both Europe-wide and UK as well, in so much as that where automation has happened in societies with a high rate of digitalization, so there's a lot of computers being in households, automation has worked much better. Where it's been done in places where there's a low level of digitalization, it has a much, much more negative effect.
Interesting. So automation has had a more negative effect on the welfare of people in areas where digitization is less developed.
Well, I mean, if you the simplest example, I mean, this came out of a Forbes article. I got very lucky to interview the previous Swedish Minister of Finance, and he actually brought it up. Was that if you look at companies like Spain and countries like Spain and Italy, they have a very low rate of digitalization. So 76% of households with more than one computer, compared to about 95% in Sweden. And yet employment and productivity in Sweden is way higher than one could say it's other factors, but it's a clear correlation. He went through New Zealand, Japan, Greece, you know, to do the comparison. It was very interesting seeing that comparison. Again, that's up there with me.
But automation was higher. Were you saying that automation was higher in those, some of those poorer countries?
No. Where they'd done the automation,
right?
In the countries with higher digitalization, employment stayed up,
right,
and productivity stayed up,
right.
It's an interesting discussion, and actually, Tom, who is listening today, has asked if you think that working in a strategic or a creative role is a way to future-proof your career from automation.
Yes. It's a short answer to that, but I think it's kind of, that's not the only route. I don't think it really matters what role you're working in, so long as you are constantly looking at how you can improve the environment around you or what your job is doing. If you've gone in there and said, right, well, my job is to do this and it's a routine job and I'm going to carry on doing it for as long until somebody tells me otherwise, then I would say that there's not very strong possibility of staying in that job. If you've gone in and you're saying, right, how can I improve this job? How can I automate it? There's always going to be room for people like that, because they're creating efficiencies for the business, which is then going to be getting more customers and the role carries on going. So I think it's just looking at it at creative and strategic roles, let me rephrase that. Being strategic in whatever role you are, yes, definitely is key.
I think it was kind of a couple of things that I think are quite interesting from some of the things that you've said. It seems that trust is very much at the heart of a lot of these things, you know, in the sense that, you know, isn't it great you can go into Amazon Go and you can get your shopping and they kind of like, obviously there is technology and surveillance around that, but there's an element of trust that's kind of implicit in that. Concerns around autonomous cars, kind of there's trust around issues around that, kind of ties a bit like into the remote working thing, that trust seems to be quite an integral issue.
Yeah, I mean, this discussion is really it's got two different planes. One of them is trust within an organization and trust between colleagues. And obviously the greater that is, the more that's going to be achieved. And then the second is, usually, stay trust on a more of a societarial level. Both of them actually, though, come back to the same issue, is trust in leaders. And communication. And if you are feeling that you're being told a bunch of bullshit, you're not going to trust that person. So the one of the things that I've tried to do from my side is to try and be as transparent as possible. There's a tendency for leaders to believe that people need to be safeguarded, which is, I think is idiotic. People are quite mature enough to be able to take things on, so long as they are given all the facts and not in a misleading way. So whether it's at a societal level or a business level, so long as people are given the facts and can believe what their leaders are telling them, then it's going to work out. The trust you're talking about, from I would put as I say, is more of a societarial level, is difficult because the leaders may be saying one thing, the press is taking another and building. I mean, news by definition is extraordinary. So because of that, it's always going to be difficult to actually get across the real situation, which is why we have so many stories about how robots are going to come and kill us all.
Yeah. It's interesting. One thing that I think is quite interesting is that a lot of the challenges around this discussion around automation and like the threat to jobs kind of seem to take place, they seem to kind of really be anchored around the idea that the world is not really going to change very much, you know, like, and it's almost like if you suddenly replace these jobs with machines, then there's not a brighter future. And interestingly, I think, you know, I kind of tend to notice a lot of companies that are in this automation space, they tend to be talk in a very kind of simplistic and short-term way, as if they feel scared to talk about a much more imaginary and sort of visionary, you know, present visionary pictures of the future, you know, like, whereas in the past we might have talked about flying cars and things. People seem to be very, leaders of companies that are shaping the future tend to be very kind of pragmatic and focused on the short term. And I wonder if we actually believed in a much brighter future that was a bit more visionary, then we might be a little less preoccupied with kind of short term things.
Yeah. Ideally, yes. But if you start looking at the psychology of people's ability to look longer term, myself included, it's not there. It's impossible for us as humans to really concentrate, to be able to see something as long way away and hold that. And especially in times like now, I mean, you know, how many people are worried about their jobs? When you're worried about your job, you're not going to be looking at, well, AI could lead us to a better society. That said, that is the job of leaders, especially at a governmental level, which I think we're being failed on enormously. But I wouldn't necessarily put it all down to them. I would also put it down to the agendas of others. So I would agree with you. That's what we should be doing, and that's what we could be doing. But it's psychologically, it isn't in us, and there's a bunch of other things which are stopping that.
As someone who I'm guessing does have a positive outlook and you know, hopefully, you know, like has a positive sense of what could be achieved. Are you at all concerned that what might happen in the current situation is that businesses might look at automation in a very kind of short-term, save money kind of way that isn't very strategic and that kind of doesn't kind of really move us forward in the way that they possibly could?
Yeah, I think, and actually the research paper we did slightly borne that out, is that 39% of the people answering said that they didn't know, they didn't have a strategic plan in place to deal with automation. Which is quite a large number of people, a large number of companies. So yes, there is a concern on that side, for sure. Definitely a concern.
And how do you think that, thinking about kind of a wider drive for digital transformation, how does automation fit within that kind of bigger picture? Like, obviously there's a worry that people aren't strategic enough in thinking about how to bring automation into their company, but what should they be thinking of in the kind of future gazing in a digital transformation perspective?
I think there's a, if I can turn that question around a little bit differently and say how could people be dealing with digital transformation and automation. I think one of the problems is often is that people go, right, well, we need to do digital transformation. Let's get a bunch of consultants in and they'll tell us what to do. Mm. But fundamentally, they don't understand the business. So the first thing which I tried with varying degrees of success to do at Pod was to actually take the people who were doing the job and tell them, right, let's find somebody, maybe we bring somebody in or whatever, to take over part of your job. And you then spend that time to really process. And it's not a very fun thing to do, that's the problem, is to really process and put into a process everything that you're doing and to put the workflows in. And once we've got to that, then at that point, it might be worth bringing in a consultant or whatever to then be able to look at it and go, well, we can process all of this and which tools would be better. And once you brought tools in, then the enthusiasm starts because people see that they're not having to do the routine and boring stuff. So the enthusiasm can start, and then there may be a whole bunch of other things that then come up as a result of that tool, because it's quite a clever tool to be able to make that happen. So one of the tools, I mean, even before you get to AI, is robotic process automation. Now the companies which sell RPA sometimes over egg what they can actually do, and you do need their theory of you just go in there and you don't know anything about it and it can make it all work and do exactly the same as you is not quite right. But the what they are doing is they can basically copy what a human is doing. So if you go in and open up this page, it'll go and open up that page and it will do it automatically. And if you take this piece of information from a spreadsheet and put it into that page, it will then do, it can copy all of that stuff. So you can then put down a process and say, right, well, this is what every morning I have to come in, I have to do this, I can get an RPA tool to go and do that. It's a very, very basic, I mean, it's not even AI, it's just a very basic process thing, but it is good for taking away the routine stuff. The problem is how do you persuade people that actually taking away the routine stuff isn't going to remove you out of a job? Because that's 2 hours of their day every morning. It's like, well, if I don't do that, what am I going to do? Well, you're going to clear your brain and think about other things you can do. But trying to persuade people that and that it's not just a ruse in order to get rid of them is extremely hard.
And do you think the companies that do that well, so the companies that are able to really embrace digital transformation with COVID-19 kind of acting as a catalyst for that, do you think that will help them to push through what is almost definitely going to be an upcoming recession and to come out of the other side?
Yeah, I mean, I would almost turn that question around the other way, Flick, and actually say those which don't do it are maybe unlikely to come out the other side. Because the change, there's going to be so many companies which are going to change, and they've been given that catalyst, as you describe it, to do so, that if you don't change and you're not willing to change your processes or change your attitudes to your employees or whatever it is, or even change your products, because a lot of people will have to change their products, if you're not willing to do those things, then there's a pretty strong chance you won't survive through this, and then, as you say, is through a recession, which is afterwards. And it's going to be a good couple of years before we come out of this, once you start to include the recession into it. I would say those companies which don't change are basically going to be committing suicide. A little bit stronger.
No, that makes sense. Sorry, Brendan.
I was going to say, we just had another question in, Charles, about whether or not legislation has a role to play in terms of creating kind of some guardrails around automation, which kind of looks out for, you know, employees and society. Do you think that there is a role for legislation in kind of maybe, you know, ensuring the best possible outcome?
I've kind of shifted my political views over the years, and actually kind of probably reversed to what most people do. I started off with a very laissez-faire attitude towards politics, but I'm beginning to realise that that there are things that only governments can do. I mean, a classic one is very easy for me to bring up, and I'm sure that lots of people would agree, is make these big companies pay taxes in where they are. And that will bring coffers into the government, which will allow them to do other things. One of the really interesting guys was a guy called Andrew Yang, who, as you know, he was trying to become president in 2020. And it's really interesting looking at what his policies were, because they were all, he was basically coming from exactly this angle, not a very political angle, but he was coming from the technology angle. He understood that the effect that the technology and automation was going to have on jobs. And he was advocating various policies, including a UBI. Which again, I'm quite a favor of as
well. Do you want to explain what a UBI is? Just for
so the universal basic income, right, basically the idea that you give an amount of money to every single person, regardless of whether they need it or not. Even if they don't need it, you can take it back in another tax year, which would be a really good idea now, because there's lots of people who are missing out by having had a really good income and now don't have anything. Well, if they were getting the money and then you realize that they were best off and they didn't need it, then you can take it back out later on. But his idea about the UBI was actually, I think he was giving $1,000 a month on the principle that, and to get rid of all the Social Security and all of this sort of stuff. That obviously can only be done at a governmental level. Other regulation I'm not sure I'm going to go into what other regulation there is, but I think there is also it's a very, very thin line between regulating something, and it's regulating AI is really, really hard, because do you regulate the regulate the purpose, or do you regulate the technology? And unfortunately, I think the easiest way is to regulate the tech, to try and regulate the technology. Well, by the time you've done that, the technology has moved on anyway.
Yeah.
And then just a final one from me, Charles, just really to leverage your expertise while we've got you here. For those businesses that, you know, at this stage know that digital transformation is an absolute must, particularly in current circumstances, know that they have to do this, but maybe feel a bit fearful about how they push that forward. What would your biggest piece of advice be for those kinds of businesses that just simply don't know where to start?
Well, I mean, I think I go back to what I said earlier on about getting employees to sit down and work out what their processes are. But before you can do that, you've really got to go through a process of making sure you've got, got the right things in place. But even before that, you need to make sure that you've got leaders who can be trusted, and managers are understanding what the goal is. And the communication is such that it is getting across what's intended, not what people want to hear. And that is, in any circumstance, the hardest part of it all. And it's going to be especially difficult when we're all remote. So putting down a vision is absolutely vital. And then understanding from that, you've got a vision, you've got a meaning, or put it another way, putting down a purpose is vital from the company. But then being able to allow the employees to take that and create their own meaning out of that. So it's a combination of working from a human side whilst working from an operational side, whilst also working from the technical side. And all of these things need to come together to make it happen. You can't do one without the other. So I think, as I say, in these times, really, really important to make sure that first, from a human point of view, people are feeling comfortable with where they are and they're being communicated to properly. And then from an operational side, really looking at what they're doing and getting the people to understand that actually this is a great opportunity not to remove your job, but to make your job better and make your job more fun. And then from a technical point of view, working out how that is done.
And I guess as well, that very clear message around how actually automation isn't optional at the moment, kind of about survival is very important, because employees who are worried about their jobs, the survival of the company is absolutely key to the survival of their roles as well.
Yeah. And I just going back to Anders Berg, the Swedish guy, what he brought up was really interesting about how if you don't automate, you're going to end up having a situation where you're going to use nearer offshoring. If you're offshoring, then those jobs can be done anywhere. What can't be done anywhere is the thinking stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
No, that's great. Well, brilliant. Well, I think that's probably a really great note to kind of bring this discussion to a close. I mean, I think one thing that an expression people have used a lot, is kind of around the fact that we're all in it together. And I think that's not actually been totally true, in the sense that some people are not, in a position to get through this more easily than others, for sure. But it does seem, as far as kind of automation and transformation is concerned, that there is a real need for business leaders to be looking at this and kind of looking at this in a very strategic way. But likewise, what your research has really shown is that there does seem, you know, like that there is an awareness that actually this is in the long-term interest of a lot of employees, in terms of it does offer a pathway to people having more fulfillment by not bogged down with the more monotonous things. So that seems to be kind of quite an interesting point. So if anyone would like to learn more about this research that has been published by Podgroup. You can go to their website, which is www.podgroup.com. For anyone who'd like to be in, learn more about Charles and his book and his other work, you can go to his website, which is www.weirdceo.com, as you would expect that to be spelt. You know, thank you so much for joining this, Charles. This, as with other previous events, is going to be made available as a podcast, which is going to be available through our Without Borders podcast, which is available on all the various different platforms. We are going to be working now, as we come to the end of this series of events that we had planned, we're going to be working on a new series, and we'll be sharing more information on that very soon. But thank you so much for joining us, Charles. And
thank you, Vic. Great to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charles, and thanks everyone for joining.
Bye.
Bye-bye.